PS, your job, your medium is people. Perhaps you should learn how to work with people safely. Like, it did not come up.
Hello, we are here at Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, Arizona, and welcome to episode 37 of Untamed Shrews, Women Talk Theater, presented by the Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Becky.
And I'm Dawn. And that is Willa.
Willa!
Joining us for the first time and making her voice heard. We are joined today by Eily Huber, a director, dramaturg, educator, and a friend of mine from grad school. But before we jump into our chat with Eily, Shrews, how are you?
This is your first episode back, right?
I know. Yeah, this is my first time back from maternity leave.
Woohoo!
I left in December. Here
Welcome
I am.
Back.
Here's Willabean.
Willabean! I know, because since we changed to the every month model, you technically would have been back last month, but we didn't have an episode last month, so.
That's right, because we're doing every other. Yeah, so I'm back. Man, it's hard. It's harder than I thought it would be, you know. Emotionally, it was a big transition to go from, I feel like I was a really awesome mom to one kid. And then having two, I suddenly feel like I'm like half the mom I want to be for both of them. And it's really rough. And
yeah,
keep trying to reframe for myself, like, you know, you've given them both something. Like, now they have this sibling and they get to have that for the rest of their life. But in the short term, it's been pretty tough. We're not sleeping well yet. Yeah. So that's also, like, that's a hard part of it too. But Willa is, like, just objectively amazing. So sweet, so friendly, such an easy baby. But yeah, being a mom is tough, y'all.
Yeah.
The hardest thing I've ever done.
I know. Sure. I feel like we need another mama's episode.
Yeah. It is being a mama in theater is just a different thing. I'd love to talk about being, you know, a mama who's like a, I don't know how you would describe it, like a flex worker. I think, you know, or a dad, you know, one of the people I really bonded with who's still very close to us is Eric Redderbush, who's a tintype photographer.
Right.
And he, his son Luca was born really close to when Blake was born. And he and I were both like the stay-at-home gig parents. And it was like, you know, kind of empathizing about that, about the difference between, you know, going into an office from 9 to 5 and being able to separate work and life
from baby. Yeah.
When you have a baby is just, it's completely different than having the baby and being at home and trying to find the hours to do
to
your job
work.
Still. It's really hard. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, we could have a whole episode about that.
Sure. Yeah, because when we did our episode with Betsy, shout out to our mama's episode, that was when you were still pregnant.
Still pregnant with Blake.
Yeah.
I had no idea what I was in for.
So it was still all a hypothetical at the time.
Yeah. Now you got some real world experience.
Yeah.
Now I've got the experience to back it up. But
right.
Yeah, anyway, she's an amazing little girl and so healthy. The birth was epic. I am so proud of how my birth went. You know, my birth with Blake was a little traumatic. It didn't necessarily happen the way I would have loved for it to. I wasn't empowered in quite the same way that I was empowered with Willa.
Yeah.
Willer. We had a really amazing experience. So that was cool. And now I'm just trying to get my feet wrapped under me. After all that. Yeah. But
you
it's good
it.
To be back on Shrews. And Willa's first time. You're shrew.
He's a baby shrew.
Welcome to
the shrew. Honorary shrew. The tiniest shrew.
Tiniest shrew.
Nice. Anything else?
No, that's about it. What about you, Hannah? Wait, can we tell the shrews that you're planning a wedding?
Oh, yeah. No, I already announced it last. Yeah.
Well,
funnily enough, because again, with the 2-month model, I only announced my engagement last episode. So it hasn't been that long. But I've been engaged since January.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, as of today, it's like 37 days.
Oh my gosh, until the wedding.
It's 30 something. I haven't checked, but it's 30 something days.
Wow.
It's just insane. Yeah, it's so exciting. Obviously, you two are two of my bridesmaids, so you know a lot of it. But we just got home from our bachelorette party, which was so much fun. We went to Laguna Beach. That was great. Willow was the tiniest of bridesmaids. So teeny tiny. But it was great that everyone did such a good job. The bridesmaids just absolutely spoiled me. My sister worked so hard. And everyone just pitched in so much to make it happen. And it was just so much fun. Honestly, went off without a hitch. It was so much fun. It was Mamma Mia themed, which was great.
There
was
so much honey.
I found my honey. There was just so much Greek food and dancing and beach time and pool time. And it was just the best. So, Yeah, mostly just fit. Like, this last month is going to be absolute go time, absolute crunch wedding time. So basically every day I'm just like buying something, prepping something, crafting something, deciding something, meeting with someone, having a phone call with someone. It's basically what it's going to be until the wedding. Like yesterday I spent hours on shapewear. I just research shapewear for my wedding dress for like 2 hours. So it's just like little things like that that we're down to, like all the teeny tiny details, like my hair, my makeup, just like finalizing catering and, you know, just all these little things. So it's very overwhelming. I will say planning a wedding is very hard, but, yeah, it's just remembering that the wedding is on the other end is so exciting. And literally if everything went completely wrong, I get Jacob at the end of it. So yeah. It's going to be fine.
And I think that whether you plan it over 2 years or 4 months, it's still overwhelming for whoever. I mean,
yeah,
you know, unless you elope, no matter how long you give yourself to plan, it's still overwhelming. So I think you're doing it right. You're just like, all right, let's get it done.
4 months of difficulty versus 2 years, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good perspective. Like, my mom asked me this morning, she was like, you probably have, you know, a lot of good advice for your girlfriends, you know, moving forward. And I'm like, I never would have thought that I would have been the kind of girl that's like, a longer engagement. But that's actually a pretty good perspective, because I would have been like, do a longer engagement. But maybe if it was an 8-month engagement, I still would have been overwhelmed. Who knows? So, because 4 months is not a lot, but 8 months, maybe I still would have been like, because life would have still gotten in the way, you know.
Yeah.
Still would have had to go to work and do shows and have friends, and all those things are still happening. So who knows? But yeah, I'm trying to think what else. Oh my gosh, I've moved into my new house. Jacob doesn't move in until we're married, but it's been so much fun, like decorating and stuff. Except, guys, wow, it has been an adventure, a peek into married life. Married life is just fending off skunks and mice from your house. So I moved in to Kachina, which is right outside of town, and it's almost more like a cabin. So we are experiencing some wildlife. So we have a skunk that lives under our house, and Jacob has just been like, he's part of the family now. But also now we have caught 2 mice.
Oh no, inside the house?
Inside the house. Oh, and sorry. I was like, we will buy a humane trap. But then like one of the mice got stuck in the trap. Anyway, it didn't kill him, but like he got his like little feetsies stuck. Oh. So it has been such a process.
Oh no, you got to get a cat. Yeah, you need to borrow a cat.
Except the cat will kill the mice.
Well, but the mice will smell the cat.
Oh, we'll stay away.
We'll stay away, yeah.
Well, I'm not allowed to have animals. Otherwise, I would absolutely sign up for that. But it has just been so funny because I've only lived there for 6 weeks, but we have already like experienced so many of those like first time home experiences, like a skunk and mice and, you know, I just like, it's so funny. But it's been great. Yeah. We still need to have Blake and Willa out. I mean, Willa's not big enough, but to come play on we have like a little backyard, like treehouse slide situation. So have Blake over for that. That'd be super fun. But I cannot wait for this summer. I'm going to probably try to throw like a big housewarming because it's such a cool house with a great backyard. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So things are good. Things are busy. Wedding and house and honeymoon and just like general prep and being engaged has been what I've been up to. And I've seen a lot of memes that are like this, where it's like when you've been CEO of your wedding all morning and then you remember that you have a job. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's 1 p.m. I've been working on wedding stuff since 8 a.m. Like, I should probably, you know, actually make some money.
Yeah. But honestly, because you had posted that little silly story of, like, can I just put this on my resume?
Seriously.
But honestly, like, I say fuck it, do it. Because, like, you are production managing this. Mm-hmm. Like, you are, like,
that's
full
stop.
You are production managing this. Like, you are artistic director. Okay, so not full stop, because you have artistic director, production manager.
And also the star? Like, I'm the star. I have directed the show. I'm the HR manager. I'm also the main character of the show.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we got to rebrand this. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are planning a wedding, put that on your resume.
Yeah.
Because you're doing a lot of work.
Well, we joked at Flag Shakes when I first got engaged that, like, one of the productions we were going to put on this year was Hannah's wedding. Like, I remember Dawn wasn't back from maternity leave yet, but one of the board members was like, and one of our 2024 productions, Hannah's wedding.
Yeah. Oh, you're also talent acquisition? Because, sorry.
All my bridesmaids. Well, I hired all of my actors.
Yes, but also your caterer, your talent acquisition. Your musicians. Yeah. Like,
true.
Yeah,
you guys are actually describing all of the reasons that I did not want a wedding. This is 100%. I remember having this conversation with Sean. I was like, mm-hmm. I literally, all I do is put on productions.
Right? Yeah.
And what is a wedding if not a production? We're eloping. Yeah. And he was like, oh, I get it.
It is a production.
You literally wear a costume and stand in front of an audience and speak from a script.
Yeah, like, costume designer, that's right.
Hannah, I am also my own costume designer.
Yep.
That's right.
It's a lot. At one of the theater companies I was working with, two people were getting married, a stage manager and an actor, and they made their wedding like a production. Mm-hmm. Like, they had a little, like a cast list.
Like a run sheet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is just, like, so silly.
That's actually kind of cute. Yeah. The cast list ideas.
Yeah. Oh, and they were both members of Actors Equity, so they had the little asterisk that said, appears courtesy of Actors Equity.
Oh my gosh. I am not equity, but that's hilarious.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
I should have been like, so Elks Lodge, how much are you going to pay me to get married at your venue? Because, you know, I'm a star.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's me.
Yay.
How about you, Bex?
Well, I got back from traveling all of March.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Of course.
Yeah, that was so great. I spent 2 weeks on the beach with my parents in Aruba. Wow, so relaxing, exactly what I needed. And then I went to the UK and immediately was cold and tired and a little bit more stressed.
But you saw Heland Coos.
I did. So in I went to London, Belfast, and Edinburgh. And in Edinburgh, I took a day trip to the Highlands and saw Heland Coos.
Heland Coos.
AKA Highland Cows. But in London, I saw 5 shows. So I saw Everyone's Talking About Jamie. Oh, God.
Police Cop.
I saw Police Cops, the musical, or Police Cop, the musical. I saw The Mousetrap.
Mm-hmm.
I saw
a classic.
Standing at the Sky's Edge. And I saw something.
You saw something else? I did. The weird one that you were telling me about.
That was in Scotland.
Oh.
Or that was in, that was in Scotland. Oh, and I saw 6.
Oh, 6.
Duh. All of them were very different. Some of them were hilarious. Some of them I liked more than others. I just want to say with The Mousetrap, it's an Agatha Christie, and so it's like a murder mystery, and I won't give away the ending or the whodunit, but there was a very brief moment where I was like, oh, I wonder if this is the person for this reason, and then that thought went away, and it was,
you did it,
it was that person for that reason.
You won.
Yeah, so that was very exciting.
That's fun.
I won.
I won.
Yeah. And then in Belfast, I saw improv. I saw an improv show. And then in Scotland, I saw some stand-up. And then I saw a show called Bluebeard, which the beginning was so, like, quirky and weird. And I was like, I could watch this forever. And then the second act got a little bit, strayed a little bit far from that. But yeah.
Like, I don't know where we're going here.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it was very cold, very rainy. I got a little bit sick, I think, from just the stress of going from 80 degrees, perfect Aruba, weather to cold and rainy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, nice. It was great. And now just back and getting back into the swing of things.
We're recuperating from said bachelorette party.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and Cadence Lamb, friend of the pod.
Cadence Lamb.
We both co-choreographed a little bit of Dancing Queen choreography. So putting that on my resume.
Love it. Love a good Mamma Mia themed bachelorette.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It was like, honestly, that was probably the most emotional part of the trip. Like when you all came out into the living room and like surprised me with that dance, I was like, oh my gosh, like tears in my eyes. I was like, I am so loved.
Yo.
Also dancing.
I was so sure that you knew something was going on.
Well,
but like before that,
something was going on. Cause like, you guys said the ruse of putting on your bridesmaids' dresses. And I thought you were just going to come out in your bridesmaids' dresses and be silly.
Yeah.
But I did not expect that level. Like, I knew something was coming.
Yeah.
And I figured you guys were just going to put on your dresses and, like, dance and make me giggle.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was going to be, like, so choreographed. You know what I mean? Like, so well put together. So it was definitely a surprise.
Yay.
Except, funnily enough, somehow my brain was like, I wonder if my bachelorette is going to be Mamma Mia themed. And then somehow it was. I don't know how my brain figured that out. It was very random and out of the blue, but
magic.
Somehow. Anything else?
Gosh, I'm sure, but can't think of anything. I'll think of it 5 minutes after we record. Yeah, so
absolutely.
Woohoo. I can't believe it's almost summer.
I know.
Sorry, that's just blowing my mind.
The fact that because really start of summer to me is the
your wedding. Yeah,
so it's like once I get married, like that's when Jacob is done with school, that's when I'm going to Puerto Rico, like that's like officially when summer begins is my wedding. So really the way my brain is thinking about it is I have 37 more days till summer.
Yeah. Damn.
Which is great.
It's good to think about it.
I'm really excited.
Okay, Shrews, let's take it over to Eily. Eily, do you want to introduce yourself to the Shrew crew and let them know who you are and let them know a little bit about what you do in the theater world?
Sure. So my name is Eily Huber and I live in rural Virginia, about 2 hours from DC. And I work professionally as a director, dramaturg, and educator. And I work in Shakespeare and I work in new plays and very, very little in between.
Understood.
So we're going to be talking about mental health today, and this is very apropos because I got to know Eily and also Catherine Mayberry, who's coming back to direct for us again this summer, at a Shakespeare Theater Alliance conference that happened right before the pandemic. Sorry, that was my baby sneezing. we met at this conference. There was an impromptu strong mental health bent to the conference that actually was very rough for me, and I really appreciated some of the conversations that I had with Eily, because in that conference I got very confused, I guess, because all of the conversations around mental health and what we should be doing for people with regards to like protecting their mental health actually made me more uncomfortable than anything else. And I had some great conversations with Eily where I felt like she was just really able to verbalize in a way that made sense some of the things that were uncomfortable and what was going on, and really talk about like how, this is the first conversations I had with Eily about how we protect a rehearsal space and make it a healthy environment for actors.
Mm-hmm.
And Eily, do you want to talk a little bit about like the work that you've done as far as mental health in the rehearsal space? And then we can jump into like some conversations about that.
So I have, kind of beginning around 2016, I realized that as a director, my training involves a lot of things like text analysis and, you know, blocking and stuff. And nobody at any point was like, P.S., your job, your medium is people. Perhaps you should learn how to work with people safely. Like, it did not come up. And I have a ton of training in directing. And so I set out to create a toolbox for myself to deal with mental health challenges in performers. And as I was working on that, I realized, well, actually, these are just, I kind of created this set of guidelines that are just like, this is actually how we should treat everyone, whether or not they have an identified mental health problem, because it turns out that when we treat people well, we get their best work, regardless of, you know, what their pre-existing diagnoses may or may not be. So I've been doing a lot of work. I call this framework Take Five, because the first thing is everyone should be able to call a five at all times with no punishment. And I've been working with university theaters and professional theaters to try to do policy implementation to make rehearsal spaces more healthy and effective for everybody.
That sounds so simple. And yet I think it's often overlooked in our industry, just the fact that you get the best work out of people when they're in their healthiest mental space. Wow.
What a surprise. What a
revelation. Yeah. Things that shouldn't
and
need
yet
to be
somehow
specified.
In the theater industry, it is a revelation.
Yeah.
Thank you, Eily. I'm so glad you're here. It's exciting to see you again and get to chat about this. I thought it would be interesting to discuss, like, what does mental health even mean? Like, what does that mean for us? What does that mean to individuals? Like, what does it mean to walk into a rehearsal room healthy? Because that's like, you know, that's so specific to each person. So, Eily, do you have a way that you define mental health or certain circumstances or parameters that like fall into mental health? Or is it just everything human related?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question. I started out thinking about this with there being kind of two categories of mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. One is like a chronic category of mental health challenge, mm-hmm. right? Like, for example, I sometimes have generalized anxiety, and that's a thing that like comes with me everywhere mm-hmm. and shows up. And like, maybe if it got worse, I would get on some medication for it. As it is, I've just kind of done therapy and things. Mm-hmm. And that's just like a part of my baseline existence in life, right?
Right.
But there are also acute mental health events, which can look like panic attacks panic attacks is kind of like the big one. But we can have moments where we otherwise are fairly in a pretty good place. And then like something happens, something right. Triggers something and all of a sudden we're no longer feeling particularly stable. And I think it's really important to note that like practically everybody will have some kind of adverse mental health event at some point in their life. And also there are these crazy statistics showing that people who work in the arts and especially in the performing arts are far more likely to experience mental health challenges and addiction and kind of a whole related suite of things than other people. And so the question is like, is it that the arts tend to draw people who are already maybe feeling things really intensely? Or is it that the arts are destroying us? And like, I kind of think it's a little of column A and a little of column B. And my goal in life is to try to minimize column B, I guess, is what I would say about that. But I'm curious what the rest of you think about when you think of mental health and like where your framing comes from.
I love what you just phrased. I think that's really, you know, that putting it into those two categories and discussing that is super helpful. I think that as you get older, you do realize that everyone at some point mm-hmm. will experience some sort of acute mental health event. Like, it's just like, you know, we use the word health because it's just like anything else in health. We are all susceptible mm-hmm. to having some sort of acute mental health event. And you may have something that you carry around with you. Boy, do I feel you on the generalized anxiety, mm-hmm. Especially after two babies. You know, that postpartum anxiety really hangs with
me. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yeah. It's so hard. You know, and then the sort of like acute events. I think that that's really great because it can make us more empathetic, even if we've never had an acute mental health event yet in our life or don't have like an underlying sort of thing that we're carrying with us, like the anxiety. We know that we might be susceptible to it at some point. And the fact that we're dealing with such sometimes raw and volatile material that can bring that up for someone, I think is kind of your, you know, your column B that you're talking about. Like, we're not just, you know, it's not just how we treat each other, it's also the content that we're encountering. And I remember, you know, I've had my best in one single show that I was in, I had my sort of like best, most protected rehearsal room experience, and it was playing Lavinia in Titus Andromachus. And the director made me feel he wanted to stage the rape, but in a very representational way, not in a way that would be like
physical, not like literal.
Not literal, very not literal. The two boys didn't even touch me during the scene that we did. They didn't even come near me. We were each sort of in our own movement cycle, but he wanted to stage this, like, obviously very horrific event. And I thought he did such a brilliant job. And I talked to students about the theater about this. Like, I'm very anti-emotional recall. And he did a very good job of not asking me to access my own emotions, experiences, events in my life that might correlate to this horrible thing we were staging. He made it very physical. And we did kind of like a very like outside in building of this moment that he wanted to create. And every step of the way, I was in control. I was in control of who was in the rehearsal room when we were rehearsing. I was in control of when we added other actors. He just gave me so much power that this very unempowered moment was amazing for me. On the other hand, I had another actor in that almost immediately following that scene in an early performance at a moment where she grabbed and licked my face. Not kidding you, not
staged, holy crap,
not choreographed. It was immediately after this very, even though it was so well done, very profoundly open moment for me. And there was nothing I could do because I was trapped on stage with her. And it was just so like shattering and disconcerting. And so I think, you know, for me, there's like these prime examples of how we can do some very amazing, deep work in theater that does tackle intense subjects so safely. And then also we can have something happen in a moment on stage that is not okay and might be deeply earth-shattering for an actor or a performer. So
what was the company's or the stage manager's or the director's response to that other actor's impromptu choice?
It was unfortunately, it was during a performance, and so there was no immediate response, but there was also no response afterward.
Did you go to your stage manager, or were you hoping that they would catch it?
No, and I think this was in 2011, and I had no tools in my toolbox. I didn't even realize that something bad had happened. I was like, oh, they made a choice on stage, right? And there used to be a lot of protecting of this kind of thing. Like, we need to be allowed to, you know, sort of make choices. And I think we absolutely do. But I think the safer we make the environment, the easier it is to make choices and the more profound those choices are. Because obviously my performance suffered not just that night, but for the rest of the run of that show, because I was not sure what she would do.
Right. And making choices should be allowed, but your choices should only affect you. Like, you know, when I think of choices, I think of like finding new inflections in my monologue. Like, I think of like looking, you know, changing the way I look at someone, you know, like not necessarily grabbing someone and licking their face. That's to me not really I mean, I guess it is technically a choice, but I think that's outside the usual realm of what is making a new choice. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like that is beyond, like, you know, keeping things fresh is great and finding nuance is awesome, but that's kind of a different level.
So there is a style of acting, and the name is escaping me, but where it is not to that extreme, or I don't think to that extreme, but where it is like blocking doesn't matter, like whatever you are feeling that night, like follow that impulse. And I was in this was over the pandemic, I was reading, I can't remember the name of it, but I was reading the like quote unquote textbook on it, like with other people, and we were just like chatting about it like chapter by chapter. And my first, so, and these were all people who had like studied that technique, and I was just kind of coming from it from the outside, and I just remember being like, but you know, like we have like intimacy choreography for a reason, and we have fight choreography for a reason, so like there is a balance, or there can be a balance of like, yes, follow your impulse, but yeah, don't do something that somebody hasn't consented to. Right. Like,
although I feel like we're getting onto like a whole interesting new subject. like you as an improver, Becky,
yeah,
like inherently improv is unstable. Like you don't know what's coming. So, hypothetical question, if someone wanted to do the style of theater like Becky is talking about, and the people in that room have consented to basically, you've consented to anything's game, you know, like you have consented to like, let's make this wild, is that okay? Because those people, those eight people or whatever, have decided this is the way we're going to do it. Just a food for thought.
Well, but you can think about like consent has to have containers, right? Mm-hmm. Like if a group of people is working in that style, then they've all agreed mm-hmm. that they're working in that style, and they agree that things could happen, right? But there are still things that are outside usually of the consent of the container, right? Like say you're working in that style and somebody full on pantses somebody else, like underwear complete. Right. Like that's obviously not allowed.
Yeah.
But you could imagine a scenario where the audience and the actors all kind of agreed that like literally anything could happen. And then I think perhaps, you know, that's, I guess, all right. Like, but it's just what we consent to in a given moment has to have parameters and containers. And when people are like, oh, everything's okay, they don't actually mean everything's okay.
That's true. Yep. And so they can agree to the wildness, but even the wildness has a limit in a way. Not literally everything. Like, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And with those like containers, like consent can be revoked for anything at any time. Right. So if today I'm comfortable with quote unquote anything, but tomorrow I'm like, you know what? Don't touch my lower half. Like that's something that, that can always be adjusted.
It's interesting. You mentioned emotional recall, Dawn. I have the complete opposite preference. I really prefer emotional recall. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast that I know there are two camps. There is the emotional recall and there is not. And I personally prefer it, but I'm okay using emotional recall and find power in emotional recall and catharsis using emotional recall, but that is not true for everybody. So it's very interesting because if I am performing a scene that is kind of eerily similar to my life, it's actually very helpful for me because I feel like I have like a chance to relive that moment. And like maybe the emotions that I didn't use at the time, or like the tears I didn't shed in the moment, or like the thing I didn't scream when it was happening, like I get to do it now. So for me it's helpful. So for me I'm like, yes, let's do it. Like I'm gonna tap into like in a way like my deepest, darkest secrets and like the things that I've gone through that have been the hardest, and I actually like doing that. Like a large part of my show is like I got so many of those emotions out so many times that like it helped me move on. Like I got to like use them over and over again. And that was really scary and raw. But at the same time, at the end of it all, I was like, wow, I am cried out. I can move on.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And that brings up a question for me to you, Eileen, which is, as a director, how do you approach these things in the rehearsal room, right? Like you have an actor who wants everything to be open and optional. You have an actor who wants all of the boundaries in place. and, you know, like for me, especially, I agree with Becky. I like to see consent as a cycle, and you get to re-consent or unconsent if you need to, if something does not feel good or does not work. You have an actor who prefers to use emotional recall. You have an actor who cannot go there. How do you approach that as a director? Because really that's the biggest challenge of a director, right? Is that you have this, your medium is people, like you said, and every single one of them is a different color.
So some directors get real into community agreements, which I think is cool for them. I don't do it because I'm always like, no, the community agreement is not going to have remotely the high level of standards that I would want. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I'm the director and my job is to tell you what the rules are. I am like a really collaborative director, but the one thing that I'm a total hard ass about is like, I have very high standards for how people treat each other, mm-hmm. and zero flexibility about that. So like, oh, are you directing other actors? Are you gossiping about somebody backstage or whatever? There is none of that. And I will come down like a hammer. and part of that, right, has to do with saying that consent is something that is like far bigger than we typically think of it as being. So oftentimes the way consent gets talked about in rehearsal spaces, especially since the advent, thank goodness, of intimacy direction, is like, what parts of your body do you consent to have touched by some other person today, right? And I do think it's important to check in about that. But consent also has to do with our inner spaces. So if I'm working, I will never, as a director, ask an actor to use emotional recall. And I don't reward it because I feel like sometimes people are just like, if I cry a lot, I can get gold stars from the director and it doesn't actually translate to like the performance itself being meaningful. But if an actor in their own process wants to use emotional recall, cool. Like, that's fine. I'm just not going to ask you to put your history at the service of my art.
Right.
And I'm never going to put you in a position where you feel like that is a thing that I'm requiring. And so I think there's kind of two different things going on there. Like, if I'm working with an actor who shares with me that a particular scene connects to something from their life and that they want to access that mm-hmm. in their work, I say, that's great. Let's keep in mind this isn't therapy and I'm not a therapist. Mm-hmm. And if you want to use this to explore, that's fine. And if at some point that becomes too hot and you don't want to, that is also completely fine. Like, mm-hmm. you can change your mind about that. And then in terms of like, what are people doing that's zany or different or whatever, in a rehearsal context, I usually have a rule that is like, you can do whatever you want, but you can't disrupt what someone else is doing, which can mean you can't touch them in some way that we haven't agreed to. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, trip them. You can't get in their way. Like, blocking exists. Although often my blocking is pretty improvisational for a while. And then the other thing is I always have a rule, unless it's like real close to the end and we're in tech and we're doing runs, that anybody can stop the thing and be like, I have an idea. Mm. Right. So in that context, obviously not in a performance, Dawn, that person should not have ever done that. But if that happened in a rehearsal where the person was like, I have this impulse that I just want to grab you and lick you, that person, instead of grabbing you and licking you in my rehearsal room, mm-hmm. would raise their hand and they would say, hey, can we just pause? I have this impulse. What do we think about this impulse? And the rules of my rehearsal room are everyone can always say no. I really love it if someone says no, but everyone can always say no. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like how I structure a space so that everyone can do their art in the way that they need to mm-hmm. without impeding on anybody else.
Yeah, also, I love that. The no, but makes so much sense as a director mm-hmm. too, because then you could say like, if you say no, but I understand, you know, because I think I understand what she was going for in that moment. And it was probably very effective for the audience, but mm-hmm. it was very harmful for me. So it's like, no, we can't do this, but can we elicit the same response?
Mm-hmm.
And we get the same message across
yeah.
with a different action? And I really think she could have. I think there were a ton of choices that could have been made yeah. in that moment that I would have been okay with, that would have gotten across what she was trying to get across.
Mm-hmm.
But I think her message was, because she was playing Tamara, so she was playing the mother of these, you know, two boys who had just done this very, you know, intense scene. Mm-hmm. And I think her message was, you're no longer in control of your body.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great message to send the audience. Unfortunately, she sent me that message. Right.
Yeah, and it could have been like a pretend spit on you or mm-hmm. like something where you weren't even touched at all. But had you discussed it, you would have known it was coming.
Or maybe even could have been a lick, which could have still sent to the audience the message, you're not in control of your body. Mm-hmm. But she could have asked me to do it, in right. which case I yeah. am still in control of my body. Because mm-hmm. I very much just felt in that moment, I felt like shit. Mm-hmm. I felt like I'm not in control uh-huh. of my body. Mm-hmm. And that should never happen. Well, I wanted to ask Eileen, so let's talk about that too, because that did happen in a performance. How do you empower stage managers? Because it would at that point be the stage manager. Mm-hmm. Maybe Becky, you have something to throw at this too. How do you empower the stage manager to know that once you're beyond that rehearsal space, they can? Mm-hmm. How would you encourage them to intercept something like that?
Oh man, that is so, it's one of those things that stage managers either understand as their job or they don't. yeah. Like I have worked with stage managers in the past who just thought their job was like to be the director's helper. And that's not it. Actually, the stage manager's job is to protect the actors from the director, it's which means true, being ready actually. To say no so, to the director.
Yeah.
Sorry?
I said, that's actually fascinating, but you're completely correct.
That's why stage managers are in the actors union. Like yeah. That is why that structure exists.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
I'm sorry, you're just like creating such interesting mental pathways for me that I never even thought of before. I'm like, oh my gosh, they are. Anyway,
continue. So I don't know how you teach a stage manager to do that other than to be like, it is your job to call out people if something changes in the show that is not appropriate. And that would be a great example. Yeah. But also, I think it's really important for there to be pathways of resolution for actors. So like, if you don't feel like you can go to the stage manager, who are two other people who are not married to each other and are not besties and are not in a teacher-student relationship that you could go to, who have the power to solve your problem. Mm-hmm. And like every company should have that for every show.
100% agree with that. And I think that's something we're starting to see more and more of is this like pathway, or at least something that includes like, if something happens and you're not happy with, or A, if you're not comfortable going to the person who, quote unquote, maybe you usually would go to, or if you're not sure who to go to, like you can go to XYZ. And if it's still not being resolved, or if something is still wrong, you can always go to, like, I know Flag Shakes has done this, like you can go to this outside state organization that is not affiliated with the company at all, that can help you.
Yeah, or like a board member who isn't a part of the day to day, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was important to me. And, you know, I always tell actors at the beginning of every rehearsal, we have like this, like where you can report to on the state level. It has nothing to do with nonprofits or theaters or whatever, but it's like my theater company is not more important to me than your like physical safety. Mm-hmm. My theater or mental safety, like my theater company is not more important to me than those two things. Your physical and mental safety is far more important. And so if it means you need to go to the state and report this company and say something bad is happening here, then please do that. If there's absolutely no one else you can contact within the company, you know, then that's what I want you to do. And I think that is really important.
Mm-hmm. I was working with a theater company a couple years ago, and they were a larger theater company, and they had an HR department. And it's common, if not 100% kind of standard, for like a contact sheet to go out at the start of rehearsals. And usually sometimes it can include like the general manager and other people involved, maybe at like the admin level. And I was not part of this rehearsal process, but I was working with the theater company in a different capacity, but I heard that the HR department was not listed on that contact sheet. And then in one of the rehearsals, the director asked a very inappropriate question to one of the female dancers, and she was like, I need to talk to HR. And so now HR is included, which I don't know why HR wouldn't have been included before, but now that HR department is included, so
That leads me into one of my big questions, which is, whose responsibility is this? And this is a rhetorical question. The actor, the director, the theater itself, the HR department, like all of the above. So are we responsible? Like, because Eileen, you're coming at this, you know, from a director. And I've heard the argument before from other directors about like, I am not a healthcare professional. Like, I cannot manage 12 people's emotional health. Like, I am here to create a show. So what are...
Sometimes it feels like that's the stage manager, I'll be honest. Very true. And that's not fair.
So Eileen, can you answer that? Because can we put this on the director? Because the director's job is to create a piece of theater, is the director's job to manage 12 people's emotional health? Or are we supposed to assume, or should we assume, that the individual actors themselves need to be able to manage their own mental health? And anyway, I'm kind of talking in circles, but can you answer that, my vague question?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. Mm-hmm. I think the answer is that it's a team effort, mm-hmm. right? Like, the company is responsible for having policies mm-hmm. that say, we're not going to tolerate abuse or whatever, and here is a way you can solve your problem if something happens. Like, that is on the company. Mm-hmm. And then the director's job is to create a space where everyone can do their best work.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a particular way of doing that, but I think there are a lot of really excellent ways of doing that that are very different from how I operate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's on the actor to own their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I have had times when I've had to sit down with an actor and I have had to say, like, hey, listen, this isn't going great. Can we talk? Like, what's up? This and this and this I'm seeing, I'm concerned about. And sometimes they will tell me, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, this horrible thing is going on in my life, right, or whatever. And sometimes they're like, don't know what you're talking about. And mm-hmm. then it's a time where I have to say, like, okay, well, here are the things that we absolutely must get done in order to do a show that we will all feel good about. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to look stupid on stage. So, like, you know, here's how. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm sitting with them and I'm like trying to creatively problem solve with them. And it sometimes is like, tell me about a time when you were successful. Tell me, you know, whatever. And trying to, I feel like most things are figure outable if we can be creative about it. And we're good at being creative in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes I have to say to a person, like, hey, this might not be the best time for you to do a show.
Mm-hmm.
And only you can know that. And the sooner you know that, the happier I will be. And this is not the only chance we're going to have. And I have had, now I have a track record of, I've had people who've had to leave a show that I was working with them on for mental health reasons, who I subsequently have worked with again.
Mm-hmm.
And I can point to that, you know, because I feel like sometimes people are just like, I just have to do this thing or I'm never going to get another chance. Mm-hmm. Like, we always act right, like every show is the last show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really important to maintain some sense of perspective.
We act like every show is the last show. Like, I don't know, that really, wow, that was powerful.
I recently heard that a community theater director in my town told some person that if she crossed him, she would never work in this town again.
Oh my gosh.
And I think about that all the time. Like, we have these stupid stakes that don't make any sense.
Yeah. Wow. You're like, that's not true. But
I
okay.
have actually no. been told that through no fault of my own, on a little tangent, but I was like just out of college and I was responding to like the Philadelphia has like a theater listserv, or they had a theater listserv, and I responded to a call and I was offered something, but there were like two dates and I said, okay, I can only do this date. And they're like, okay. And then maybe a week or two later, they're like, okay, so here's the information for the date that you can't do. And I was like, oh, I mentioned like I'm not available this day. And the whoever it was so livid with me. She was like, this is so unprofessional. Like, you committed to this, blah, blah, blah. Like,
but
I'm going to. Yeah. And I'm like, but I didn't. I don't know where these wires got crossed. But she was like, you will not work in this town again. And I'm like, okay, bye. Like, I don't, that's not true. Like, so anyway.
So silly. Yeah.
Sorry, I leave back to what you were saying.
No, I mean, like, I think that's basically it, is just like, and I do think it's really important that directors are very aware that we are not mental health professionals. So like, I always get concerned when I hear about directors doing stuff that is best done by a licensed therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I also just want to say, like, there is a position, a job in the theater called mental health coordinator, mm-hmm. which is someone who is a trained mental health professional who sometimes will be hired either because there's been a crisis on a show or because a show maybe has like some challenging material. Like if you were doing Titus Andronicus, you might want mm-hmm. to hire a mental health coordinator. And there's actually a whole group of them called the Association of Mental Health Coordinators, founded by my friend Bridget McCarthy, who is amazing. And they are training people to do this work. So that is a resource that you can use. But yeah, I think it's really important for directors to be like, I am not a therapist.
Right.
There is
some line where I should just stop and send you to an actual therapist. Mm-hmm.
Isla, do you know if they work? Because this, we encounter this a lot because we're like a theater island. We're the only professional theater in Northern Arizona. So it's very hard for us to sometimes access these resources. Do you know, is that something where you could get help remotely or virtually? Or is it someone who needs to be in the rehearsal space?
So I'm not actually sure. I know that they do their training remotely. Mm-hmm. But like, that organization does training via Zoom and you can sign up and do it. And it's really good. But I don't actually know if they feel like they need to be physically present and embedded with a company to do that kind of work.
I feel like,
Bridget has gone to Island Shakespeare and mm-hmm. Great River, I think she was at, and mm-hmm. been part of a production from the beginning.
Right.
I don't know if she's done it remotely.
I feel like they would need to be there, Dawn, because an actor would need to trust them and mm-hmm. know them well enough rather than them just being a name on a piece of paper that they could call if they wanted to, because they're not going to call. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is. What's that organization called again?
The Association of Mental Health Coordinators.
Okay, cool.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, because, even paying for a training for someone here locally would be, I think that could be a really cool thing for Flagshakes to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even Raquel, if she's got time.
Yeah, totally.
She's got a lot.
That kind of leads me to a question I had left on the outline about what do you do when you're in a bad place during a show? So, Isla, you had mentioned, well, we kind of touched on the you can't drop out of a show mentality. That's sort of at least that's the way I grew up in the theater. It's if you are in a show, you don't drop a show. So can we discuss that? Because I come at it from two perspectives. I, as an actor and a person who has dealt with mental health crises, it's something that's sometimes necessary, but I also understand as administrators, it can be really dang hard. So how do we think about that? Because especially as a small company, losing an actor is hard, obviously. We don't want to lose an actor, but we also understand that this is a job. So how do we balance the fact that we take our art really seriously, and obviously shows are very important to us and we want them to be great, but how do we also prioritize the humans? And how do we also as administrators handle when things like that do happen? Say we do lose an actor because they are just not in a place to do it, or they lose a grandparent, or they, go through a breakup, or, just anything in life that might come up that was just absolutely unexpected, that is beyond the normal, what I bring with me every day. So how do we handle that as administrators?
So that's, everything is so hard.
Sorry, I gave you four things to talk about. So
I think that the biggest thing that we can do is to let people ask for what they need and not punish them for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the pattern I have seen happen is somebody's going through something, and they know that the show must go on, and they feel like they have to really push themselves and they can't mm-hmm. make healthy choices. And so they don't ask for what they need until things have reached a boiling over kind of point.
Right.
And then what they need is a lot. I need someone else to replace me. I need to not do the show. Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas if you create a space where people can feel okay, actually I have this thing going on, and what I need is to, have this particular day off so mm-hmm. that I can go home and be with my family, because they're going through a thing, or
right.
what I need is this adjustment in what I'm being asked to do or something. There are usually things that are small changes actually that we can be making that can support people's needs so that they don't get totally overwhelmed and to a point where they cannot do the thing. And also, even if the thing someone needs is to not be in the show, the more we make people feel that they will not be punished for asking for what they need, the less likely they are to say, it's tech week and I can't do the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I just recently was working on a show, and I had an actor who had a grandparent who was in hospice. And the actor said to me, okay, this is going on, I think I can still do the show. And I was like, all right, but the sooner you let me know, the happier I will be. And then a few days later, still very early in the process, she came to me and she said,
this is not going to work. I just cannot do this right now. And I was like, okay. I still had 4 weeks to find another actor and rehearse another actor. Mm-hmm. As opposed to if I had really pushed her, I think she would have had a meltdown during tech week. And during tech week is the worst time to be trying to find and rehearse another actor. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but it's real hard. That's the short answer.
It is real hard. If you're like, there are protections in place, right? Like if you're an employee of the organization, legally, like you can ask for reasonable accommodations. Mm-hmm. And Eileen, I love what you said, where it's like sometimes we just don't say anything until it's reached this big point. And and I guess my hope is like for people in the industry to either know that like you can ask, like if you know you're going to need something, you can ask for that. Mm-hmm. And if that happens midway through rehearsal, that you feel empowered to ask for that. Maybe you didn't need it before, but now something has changed. And mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just always my hope. Like, yeah, that people feel empowered, like just like leaving things better than the way that you found them type mentality.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, I just feel like I have so many questions. So, with this situation as well, or with this conversation, something that also comes to mind is the question about how do you handle other people's emotions when you have your own to handle? Like, especially as administrators or like Eileen, you know, as the director, like we all, like you said, bring things with us every day, right? And sometimes it can be so difficult because we're barely keeping ourselves afloat. And so when other people come to us, how do we manage our own emotions when maybe an actor or a staff member or whatever is also dealing with so much?
I totally want to hear Eileen's answer, but also just have to like jump in here jokingly, but also not jokingly. Nothing will teach you this as much as being a toddler mom.
1,000,000%.
Because you're dealing with the biggest emotions, mm-hmm. and you literally cannot have a breakdown. And but I think that there are some amazing resources for this out there that people can like pursue personally. And I know it's going to seem silly because some of them are like parent resources, but if you can follow Dr. Chaz on Instagram, like talk about someone who will teach you how to understand like the different levels of your brain and when you're in, you know, like when your executive function isn't working and you're in your emotional state, when your emotional state isn't even working and you're in your like
primal
state. Yeah. And how to move back through those things. But like the idea of being able to not emotionally disassociate to the person who you're trying to, you know, help through a moment, but to keep your own emotions out of it, to not allow it to be something that
topples you over
into a bad place also, or affects your emotional state. I think this is something we're trying to learn culturally, and it's super helpful in the theater also. I think, you know, being a parent and being like, oh, this huge emotion is happening next to me, but I am the calm, confident leader of my home/rehearsal room. Yep. And I can stay in my executive state while this happens is really, really powerful and profound. But I also want to hear Eileen's response. So sorry, Eileen.
No need to apologize. I actually am like, oh gosh, I'm answering everything first. This is weird. I'm glad that you said that. I think, like, first of all, this just has to be this part of the skill set of a leader. Like, if you're in leadership, you need to be okay about dealing with your own nonsense. In a way that doesn't ask other people to deal with it for you. But there are a lot of tools that we can use. Like, one really important one, I think, is being willing to call a timeout, being willing to take five, right? So, like, if an actor comes to me and they are just, like, really in a state and maybe they're in that particular state in a way that I find personally activating, I totally am able to say, I hear your concern and I want to listen to you more. I need to take 5 minutes and then we will reconvene. So it's not like I'm never going to talk to you about this. And it's not like, how dare you? It's just, I need 5 minutes and I will like go sit in my car and breathe deeply and, you know, come up with a plan of how I'm going to handle a thing. Like, that's always okay. Another thing that is always okay is asking for help. And so even in a small company, you should always have somebody else you can ask for help. You should have a stage manager. Mm-hmm. You should have a producer. You should have a board member. You should have, like, someone you can trust. You can say, this situation mm-hmm. is challenging for me
beyond
for reasons. You don't have to say why. Can you come help me? Mm-hmm. And then the other really huge thing that I have been working on really hard and not going well is you need to know, like, what is in your own bags of garbage that you carry through the world mm-hmm. and be ready to understand that, like, somebody else bumped into that bag of garbage and it's not their fault. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've all had these moments where we've, like, had a concern we brought to our supervisor and their response has felt really outsized. Mm-hmm. And actually that's because we activated some specific thing that they carry through their life. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, I have a really hard time when I feel like I am being judged and found wanting. Like, that is a huge thing for me. Mm-hmm. And, because I know that about myself, there are times when people will come to me and what they're saying is basically like, I feel like, you know, this thing didn't go well. And what I'm hearing is, you don't think I am competent. And I need to go, okay, this is activating this thing that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with this person. Like, they're pushing buttons that other people installed.
Right.
I need to not punish them for pushing those buttons that are just, like, you know, in this mm-hmm. in this bag of garbage that I carry with me. And, like,
interesting.
You know, maybe that's therapy. Maybe that's journaling. Maybe it's just thinking about three interactions that you were part of that did not go the way you wanted to and seeing what the pattern is. But having that, like, tattooed on my brain has really been a game changer.
I really like what you said about, like, we have our own buttons, and if other people accidentally press them, we have to give them grace. Because I like what you said about how other people installed those buttons. That's so funny.
They're pushing buttons other people installed.
Yeah.
So that, favorite phrase.
Yeah, but also that, like, maybe just the circumstances of your life installed, not even other people. That's really true what you've said about, like, having other people in place. Like, any time that Flag Shakes has gone through stuff, like, you know, we have excellent board members that sometimes, like, we have to just be like, help, you know, like, mm-hmm. we just need, like, that extra, you know, layer of help. And sometimes it's nice to have someone outside of the situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. I feel like we've covered so many awesome topics. I wish we could keep chatting. What's our sort of, like, take home and any final remarks from everybody? We could literally have three more episodes about this, but Eileen, maybe tell us a bit more about resources and, how people could maybe learn more about what we're discussing.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I think that as much as possible, stage managers, directors, and everyone should get certified in mental health first aid, which is not like being a mental health provider. It's just, you know, it's like regular first aid. Like, where are the band-aids? Something happened. What do I do to stabilize the situation until someone who knows what they're doing shows up? And you probably can get certified in that for free through your health department. So mm-hmm. please look into that. As I said, the Association of Mental Health Coordinators does a lot of work around mental health that is specific to the theater, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. And then also I teach these little workshops on the internet from time to time on my framework, Take Five. And if people are curious about that, they can go to eileehuber.com and sign up for my little mental health newsletter. And then they would hear about those things.
Nice.
Eileen, would you spell that?
So that's what I've got for resources.
Yeah.
Would you spell eileehuber.com for everyone?
Oh, sure. Sorry. AileehuberCom.
Nice. Cool. Dawn, Becky, final thoughts?
I'm just so grateful. Thank you so much, Eileen. I think, you know, this is, it's very nuanced and complicated, but I truly believe that when people just approach it with an open mind and willingness, that we can solve a lot of these, you know, problems creatively and make a much better space for our artists. Just by allowing it to be nuanced and complicated and not being afraid of, you know, getting in there and really figuring things out as they come up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I echo what everyone has said. Thank you, Eileen, for taking the time to chat with us and for fighting the good fight.
Yeah. I feel like I asked so many questions. I was like, well, that leads me to this other thing. So apologies if I asked like 7 questions.
No, I loved your questions.
I was like, okay, but also this though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard being an actor human. Just hard being a human in the world, you know. So many, and especially an artist, like we all feel at such large capacities in our community. So it just feels like so much sometimes.
But that reminds me, I saw something where it was like, people keep telling artists, like, you got to have thick skin, toughen up. It's a lot of no. But then we ask our artists to be completely vulnerable and tap into their emotions. And like,
very true.
And yeah. So
and somehow we have to be both. Yeah. Crazy. Yes, thank you so much, Eily. It's really incredible to have you. And thank you for joining us in the, what did you call it? The Honda office?
Oh. Yes, I'm calling from the Honda office.
Calling
Thank
from
you
the Honda
so
office.
Much for having me.
Yay.
I really appreciate getting to connect with all of you.
Yeah, I'm so good to see you outside of Stop. Well, thanks for listening to this month's episode of Untamed Shrews. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Becky.
And I'm Dawn. Join us for our next episode in July. Follow Untamed Shrews on our Instagram at Untamed Shrews Podcast and on the Flag Shakes website. All episodes of Untamed Shrews can be found wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on sunsounds.org.
Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, put us in your Instagram stories, donate at flagshakes.org/donate, become a podcast sponsor, and buy Shrew Crew merch. Help support the Shrew Crew.
This episode of Untamed Shrews, starring Hannah Fonts, Dawn Tucker, Becky Zaritsky, and Eily Huber. Show art by Calliope Ludecker. Podcast theme song by Cadence Lamb. Podcast produced and edited by Hannah Fonts, presented by Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival, and recorded with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Special thanks to our audio engineer, Gina Byers. Bye!